Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Well, I just want to bring you up like an elevator, not down like also an elevator. Yo, it's Word Burglar. I'll tell you later. I'm the host of the Geekscape podcast. Do you still like this movie? Where a guest and I find out if we still like a movie that we used to like. I'm also a rapper of rhymes, and I got a brand new vinyl crowdfunder on Bandcamp right now for the MacGuffin Device LP. 14 tracks of old school hip hop infused with geeky, nerdy things like vinyl collecting, comic books, video games, action figures, cartoons, Dungeons and Dragons, all kinds of dope stuff wrapped up over old school hip hop beats and turntablism. You can help support at wordburglar.com, and hopefully I can get in your ears soon. Geekscape forever.
Hi, Geekscapists. Welcome to the brand new Geekscape special all about the Book of Boba Fett Season 1. I'm Jonathan London, and if this is your first Geekscape, I ask that every time I start a show. If this is your first Geekscape, is it? We talk movies, video games, comic books, all that stuff. But today, well, this is a special all about the Book of Boba Fett. That's Season 1 on Disney+. It just wrapped up. Ian and I, we might have some things to say about it. Some people love it, some people not so much, but you did get what you asked for, which was a series all about your childhood favorite bounty hunter. That being said, was it what we expected? I don't think it was, but is that good or bad? We'll talk about it with Ian here in a bit. Again, if this is your first Geekscape, thank you. Go ahead and subscribe to the audio portion of the show. We're number 4 in Sri Lanka. Did you know that? Yes, we are, as far as film interview podcasts go. We have some awesome podcasts coming up for you all very soon. So watch this feed. We've been working on some great guests. And then go back to the feed. We've had some amazing episodes, as well as like more of these specials, deep diving on some of your favorite releases. And we got a ton coming up, from The Batman to Peacemaker Season 1, like ending next week. Ian's going to be on here a bit, and we're going to be breaking it down. We got a lot of work to do. That's what we call it. We're going to call it work. Got a lot of work to do coming up. So yeah, go ahead and subscribe to the audio podcast, whatever podcatcher you want. It's always free, and you can always catch us in video form on Twitch, Facebook, YouTube, and now my LinkedIn, because I'm a working professional. Just search for Geekscape. You'll find us. But let's get it started. This is the Geekscape Boba Fett Season 1 special. Rock and roll. All right, Geekscapists, let's get down to business. This is the Boba Fett, the Book of Boba Fett, Season 1 special here on Geekscape. There's already people in the chat room, and I never know how things are going to go. We're recording this thing on a Saturday afternoon. Ian's schedule got busy. This is the way it shook out, and I never know if we're going to have people watching us on a weekend, but they are, and that's great. Hopefully, you're able to catch one of these live shows later on if you're listening on the podcast. Let's get right to it. As I said earlier, this is the Book of Boba Fett Season 1 special, so there will be tons of spoilers. This is the part of the show where I talk spoiler warning. So if you have not finished the season, what are you doing watching this? Because we're going to get a huge deep dive going on. So without further ado, here's my good friend Ian Kerner. Ian, I think we got some things to say about this season of the Boba Fett show that we've all been asking for since we were kids. Like, since we saw Boba Fett go out in Return of the Jedi, we were like, wait, that's not all we want to see of the Boba Fett. This character that's been on screen for 10 minutes and had like three lines, that's not all she wrote. That's such a cool character. Let's have him back.
Agreed.
Did we know what we were asking for, Ian?
Well, first of all, I do want to say to anyone listening, you know, something that benefited a lot. My wife, who's a casual fan, not super fans like many of us, was one of those people that said, I understand, why do people love Boba Fett so much? He's barely on the screen. And they had that, I think it's called Legacy of Boba Fett, the little special they have on Disney Plus. It's really worth watching. It shows how Boba Fett's fandom developed from the very get-go of concept and just all of it, all the popularity, everything. And that's worth watching. Before you've seen Book of Boba Fett, after, doesn't matter when, it's worth watching. This show, more than maybe any other I've ever seen, definitely played into fan service on a massive scale. Maybe not always in the best way. Pacing is a major problem with this show. Am I disappointed? Yes. Am I glad it exists? Still, yes. I'm kind of landing in a place of, and I think that you and I ultimately come to the same place of, this was Mandalorian season 2.5. And I think, sure, it would have been served a lot better being Mandalorian season 3 with aspects of this interspersed in it. You know?
Cool.
I think the trickiest thing...
I have a lot
to
say.
I know
you know
do.
I do.
I think
I wrote you a
thing...
very long email, yeah, with, well, many points. Hold on, we're pausing because Matt Kelly just added another podcast to the Geekscape Network. That's the siren right there. So we're now at 48,000 shows. Sorry, Ian, you have yet to get your own dedicated show, but that's the siren.
I think that the tricky thing about the show was, you know, as you said, we've been waiting since 1983, Return of the Jedi, for the story of Boba Fett. In so much of the extended universe, now legend stuff, you know, which I always took to be pretty definitive, Boba Fett survived, you know? The Bounty Hunter books were fantastic, you know, things like that. I felt pretty confident in was episode 5 of season 1 Mandalorian, though were his boots, and that ended up being the case. And, you know...
You're talking about when Senek is shot, and
yes.
We see that play out, obviously, in episode.
No, they caught us up. And the thing is, and then he shows up, and clearly he's demonstrating skills and some garb and weapons that indicate that he's had some major dealings with the Tusken Raiders, right?
Right.
So, you know, in terms of fan service, the show went into some great detail, giving us the in-between pieces. There were definitely some things about that surprised me. I think that they had a big problem. They knew they wanted to do the present. They knew they needed to show us how he got there. And at the same time, do the Mandalorian stuff. And I think you feel this way too. The whole show would have been a lot better. I mean, you say intersperse the stuff in 5 and 6 through 1 through 4, however you want to look at it. But if it was a cohesive show, that it was, this is what Boba Fett's doing, this is what Din Djarin's doing, this is what Grogu's doing. You know, to me, that's season 3 of The Mandalorian. Structure the whole thing differently. I think the big problem is to have all those things going on and doing Boba Fett flashbacks would have been, I mean, how do you do that? I think there was a way, and they didn't figure it out, and that would have been a much better show.
Ian, can you move forward? You are actually pretty good when you're close to that microphone and you fill out a nice frame. You're a handsome guy for you video viewers. Okay, I had a lot to say. And in episode 1, I started kind of being like, wait, things are a little wonky here. And I could not have been more hopeful for this season because I am a Robert Rodriguez fan. Robert Rodriguez is
still
very influential to me.
Still?
Yeah. I mean, I'm one of the people who really enjoyed Battle Angel. I went to see it. I enjoyed it. And I was like, I'd love to get a sequel to this. Yeah.
I enjoyed that. Yeah.
And Robert, to me, is someone who, you know, getting into film, coming from Austin, he's a local hero. And I love his modern Westerns. And when I hear that he's going to do the Book of Boba Fett and it's Robert Rodriguez, great. I don't care if it is its own thing. It was not advertised as Mandalorian season 3, even though I'd heard that that was some of the conversations that were happening on set where some people thought that they were shooting Mandalorian season 3.
Well, now we know why.
And I'm down with a dedicated Boba Fett show. I'm even down with a dedicated Boba Fett show in Jabba's palace on Tatooine, which beyond going back and getting Slave One in the armor, which you already had at the end of Mandalorian season two.
Let's be honest.
I didn't know why he was returning to Tatooine. But it set up for a very cool modern Western. I wanted more of that. What was the thing that I kept saying?
Well, you've said to me many times that, you know, they don't spend enough time on Tatooine. They don't go there enough. You know, we need more Tatooine.
Yeah. Let's get it. I hope the Obi-Wan series is like half Tatooine. I hope it's three quarters Tatooine.
I think we can expect Tatooine in the Obi-Wan series.
Yeah. It's not like it's any cheaper to shoot in a bunch of sand.
No.
And then you've got this virtual set, and we'll get to the shortcomings of the virtual set that started to make themselves apparent on this.
We were discussing Robert Rodriguez, and I think that, you know, if it had been one episode, it's one thing, but consistently, every single one of his episodes is off. Like, the action does not pace well. It's astoundingly so. It's like the action is boring in every one of his episodes.
Director.
I'd love for you to explain to me, because, you know, like, one was meh, three was meh, two was great, you know, four was way better than one and three.
Loved four. I actually really enjoyed a lot of parts of four. I don't think the story makes sense in pieces of four. Some of it's very head scratching,
right?
But I don't think story works a lot in a lot of these episodes. I wrote Ian basically a book of Jonathan squabbles before the episode, where I said, hey, these are the talking points and I might as well just start getting to them. Some of y'all are commenting in the chat, and I love that. And Andy backs me up on the whole Tatooine thing. I think a lot of us agree with it, where Andy on Facebook says, please, there's a whole universe out there. I agree wholeheartedly. I've argued that since the episodes 1 through 3, the prequels. I think that it was weird to have so much Tatooine there in the prequels, or to have Anakin come from there, especially since that's where the twins are then hidden. You literally hid the twins, Anakin's home planet.
The fact that it's, you know, Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru calls out an Anakin connection there. So I think that that's why that did have to happen. Anakin needed to come from there for that to make any sense.
And back to the argument of interspersing all of the Star Wars Disney Plus characters into one series, Edwin Black says, small cuts to Din and Grogu during Book of Boba Fett would have been fine, with Mandalorian season 3 filling in those scenes later. That would have been great. Taking the focus off the titular character for two entire episodes was not a great idea. And we'll get to those episodes 5 and 6 and how they really derail the story that we have, but let's actually start with those first four episodes and talk about the story that we actually have at that point. Sure. 'Cause I think the problems start kind of early and become very clear and bigger as they go on. The first one is like, you've got Boba Fett. We saw him at the tag at the end of Mandalorian season 2. He shoots, you know, you see him take over Jabba's palace from Bib Fortuna. He sits in the throne and he's established himself now as the daimyo of Tatooine. He's going to be the gang boss of Tatooine. All right, great. That's no doubt going to have some rivals. We saw that in the trailer. I'm down. Let's see what Boba Fett does with the rivals. And we see them pretty quickly. We see these two Hutt twins, who I really love. The Hutt twins are fun.
Yeah,
but right. Later on, we do find out that we also have the Pikes establishing a trade, a spice syndicate that goes through Tatooine. We also see rival gang bosses that are sharing Mos Vespa with Boba Fett. Now we have kind of a loose, like not even tiered, you know, bunch of bad guys that Boba Fett's going to have to deal with. He does not actually go about dealing with them at all. And I don't understand how a lot of this real estate got spent. The whole flashback thing was a little fat, and a lot of the wasted real estate that I thought was promising, and we'll find out later, like they could, or I think they could have used it, was flashbacks to things like Jango Fett's ship from episode 2. And you see a young cloned Bubba on Kamino looking at the slave one, with Kamino, like, flight away. And that didn't really tie in ever again, that this, and they showed it multiple times that they had flashbacks, not just to his time with the Tuskens. You got flashbacks to him as a kid. They even recreated him holding Jango Fett's head. None of that stuff mattered in the end. And I didn't really, did it tie in for you, Ian? Am I taking crazy?
No, you know where that mattered? It's there's definitely something to be said for the fact that going completely away from Boba Fett for episodes 5 and 6 sort of displaced the narrative. Because the narrative ultimately very much was about he hasn't really felt like he belonged with anyone since his father died. And that's what he got from the Tuskens. I was very disappointed when you saw the Tuskens got completely wiped out. You know, because in the earlier episodes, I figured maybe this was all about doing it for the Tuskens, you know, saving Tatooine for the Tuskens. And I think you, in among your many points, I think that was one of the issues that you had was, who is he saving Tatooine for? Does he care about the Mos Espans? Until it's pointed out to him, he doesn't seem like he really does. And if he does, why does he?
He says, these are my people. Yeah. The spice is hurting them. We never see evidence of the spice hurting any of them.
Well, I want to talk about that at greater length. I want to talk about the spice.
Even when he's like in episode 7, charged with taking a stand, he wants to do it from his palace, and he's actually talked into doing it from Mos Vespa. How are those his people?
So here's a big issue that I have. We know that spice is mined on Kessel. We've seen in many places spice pops up. We know spice is an illegal drug. They hit it a bit more in Clone Wars than in the movies. But it's definitely an illegal drug, so you could make certain assumptions. I mean, I think there's one extended universe thing that has some telepathic abilities. It's a Han Solo story. But for the most part, let's go with illegal drug. Mind on Kessel, not mind on Tatooine. Now, let's all call this out. It's much easier to call out for people this year because of Dune. Spice was a nod from George Lucas to Dune. You know, George Lucas, it's not even a question. He borrowed, this was, you know, it was all a lot of homages. You have a desert planet. They're making references to spice. You know, if you told me, much like Dune, that spice was mined on Tatooine, I would understand it. Okay? Tatooine is a fucking shithole. All right? Seriously. There aren't that many people on Tatooine.
No.
If the whole point is it's distribution because they want to distribute spice on Tatooine, that doesn't make a lot of sense. It wouldn't be a lot of money. If you tell me,
especially if it's the place of the universe where, if there's a center of the universe, there's a place where it's furthest from, which is paraphrasing what Luke says in episode 4.
No, it's the outer rim. Okay. If you tell me that for some reason Tatooine is a distribution hub and it's important in hyperspace lanes, that would make sense within the Star Wars of it, because that's an actual thing in computing everything, and, you know, it's jump points, it's all that.
Sure.
That could make some sense, but that's not developed. Down to, they actually are on convoys going across Tatooine and Tusken territory with spice.
Why would you need to?
Why do they even have to stop there?
And as Andy says,
it doesn't make any sense
to me.
Why are
tourists going there? Yeah. This isn't a tourist destination. Like, why are they going to Mos Vespa?
It makes no sense to me. That's something I have a big problem with, because this is what I want to say. Going into this episode, and obviously we're going to get more into it, but let's just say right now, and there's a reason why I'm saying this now. Seemingly, well, it's all settled. Well, it isn't all settled, okay? If you know the Star Wars mythology, particularly, and if you read the comics, what's going on there, you know it's always been the case. There have been a lot of different crime lords and organizations. The Hutts are one of them. There was Black Sun. There's the Pike Syndicate. Crimson Dawn is a big thing. Okay. You know, it's at the end of Solo, it's set up. I think that, you know, Kira's showing up somewhere. I expected her in this show, maybe at the end. you know, probably in a later season. That's my opinion. I came away from the show going like, you know what? It was wrapped up tight enough that they could not do another season. I'd be fine. I think they're going to. I think the biggest story becomes about Kira and Crimson Dawn. I think that what they've set up is, I mean, look, here's the bottom line. Whatever the rationale that is not clear for why it's so important to have Tatooine, it's still important to anyone that's taking the place of the Pike Syndicate.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that will be Crimson Dawn. But that's going to happen. It's money. That's what it's about. So it's not going to go away. You know? So there's that.
How is it hurting their people? We've not seen it.
Exactly. Because do people use spice? We don't see it. I agree.
We don't see people ODing on it.
Is it the crime of coming through? I don't see it. You know, was it hitting people in Freetown? No, because he's not even letting it happen to begin with.
It's not even affecting the, like, Jennifer Beals' bar, which I think that bar could have played a much more important role.
I mean, a lot of us thought she was double dealing. Maybe she was making a power move after episode one.
It would have been a great opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
It would have been a great opportunity to be like, oh, she's the big bad.
Whether she's the big bad, whether she's in with the Pikes, whether she's in with Crimson Dawn would have made a whole lot of sense.
So, Ian, what you're saying is like is something that I wanted to touch on that is Boba Fett falls for a lot. He gets tricked by the Pikes several times. He gets tricked by the Hutts. They make it all the way into his palace with an assassin.
Look,
he gets tricked by his rival gang leaders. He gets tricked by literally everybody in this show. By the time episode 7 comes around, we're still supposed to hold this guy to a lofty standard
in the tag,
as the protagonist of the show.
In the tag for Mandalorian season 2 at the end there, when we saw that, when cool, but what is that about? Why does Boba Fett want to be Jabba the Hutt? I thought his conversation with Fennec Shand in the flashback made a lot of sense, and I liked it. Did I buy it? I'm not sure, but I liked it. I liked the idea of, okay, we're going to be our own bosses, and we're going to do something for ourselves.
Yeah, I'm not going to get killed on some idiot's errand. I got it, too.
I liked the idea that Bib Fortuna's weak. It shouldn't have been him. You know, I like that stuff. That's interesting. I wish I saw Boba Fett is more savvy about what's going on out there with the other crime families, including Crimson Dawn. I felt that, you know, it was really interesting. As you're watching the flashback stuff, and it's hard to tell how much time's gone by, and clearly, boom, they're caught up. So he spent 4.5 years more with the Tuskens.
Yes.
I didn't know that until suddenly, oh, guess what? It resonated more for me that, okay, no, he's truly that. But they didn't do a great job in that jump. They could have done a better job. Honestly, and not I know this is a staple and sort of a trope, but it would have worked better for me if throw a scene or two in, let him have mated with somebody. You know, like let him have had a true family, let him have adopted the young kid, you know, like a little more to show it was a true life and family he had there. And 5 years went by.
And those are his people. Those are the people you actually have to put in danger.
Yeah.
Because the Mos Vespans weren't really in. I mean, they were now, kind of just chilling
now. And I think I already said this, but again, and then to wipe them all out. I mean, sure, be fine. They wiped out that tribe. Shouldn't there be more Tusken tribes? We reached out to them. Show me that. Make it about that. Yeah. That would have made sense to me.
And it would have been nice and an opportunity to integrate the city versus desert rivalry that we only got in mention in a few places in episode 7 where it's like, oh, this is a thing where the city people and the desert people don't in Freetown don't like each other. Well, that's sentimentally nice.
Yeah, but episode one.
So at the end of episode 1, Ian, I just didn't feel like there were enough seeds planted to carry a season. And a lot of this stuff just felt like rocks skipping off the surface rather than actual things being planted that we were going to see throughout.
What they did with the Tuskens until they killed them all, for me, I'm seeing what this is. And if it was about that, it was about, you know, I know it might have felt a little bit too Dune, but desert power, freeing the Tuskens, you know, even things like when they get into things that I never heard before about that, you know, it wasn't always a big desert. It used to be water here. Tatooine was a paradise. Mm-hmm. Tuskens have been around all this time. They're the natives, you know? That's interesting, the fact of Boba Fett, you know, identifying with them. And by the way, and I need to say this because I felt it was called out, it was in the Mandalorian before, but it's really called out strongly with the Grogu part, of this idea of, you know, you don't have to be born into it, you know? I mean, you don't have to be born into being a Mandalorian, you don't have to be born into being a Tusken. It becomes a way of life and a culture, and you accept it, and you become part of it, and that's what you now are. And I'm
and
good
we'll get
with
to
that.
We'll get to the Grogu, Lone Wolf, and Cub scene, but it's also planted, you don't have to be just one thing. Sure. Whether it's a Mandalorian or a Jedi, you can be both. And they definitely showed their hand in episode 5, and we'll get to episode 5, because there's no way Grogu's not going to have a lightsaber and the chainmail.
Right. Question, is it the darksaber, or is that just too big for him? Is Grogu the Mandalorian as prophecy? Doesn't that make sense?
It does. And we'll see what happens in Mandalorian 3, and we're all still going to avidly be watching that at 2 in the morning when it hits, and it'll be fine. But I still want to talk about some of the things that were in these first 4 episodes didn't fly. We all wanted to see the Patton Oswalt patented escape from the Sarlacc, and we got it. It was great. It was simplistic. I mean, that sounds like an insult, but it was very easy to escape from the Sarlacc. The Sarlacc posed no further danger, and he escaped by punching out the side of it and then digging out some sand in his armor, which for some reason then in episode 4, he goes back to search inside the Sarlacc. That's like if Ian had left the house without his phone, knew he left the house without the phone, but then when he's like, oh, where's my phone? He went back and searched the house for the phone. Well, he knew he had it when he left the house.
Yeah, I mean, look, you could argue he was kind of messed up and all that, but it should have been said. There should have been something. The Jawas took it.
He wasn't too messed up to get his ship back, Ian.
Yeah, I'm saying he never tracks that. He doesn't find out. I mean, and I felt like they'd sort of written themselves into a corner. So he was with the Tuskens, so we didn't know about his armor. I guess since we see him just when Din Djarin just took off with the armor, it's like he just figured this out because he just come to town, so he heard about it. You know, I would have liked to have seen it. I would have liked to have seen a bar scene in which someone's talking about this marshal in which mosque was it? But now Freetown.
I was going to call it Freetown, but okay. Yes, you could say Boba Fett's back,
or someone's in Boba's armor. You know,
someone's in Boba's armor. Something where he puts two and two together.
Yeah,
he should know it's not in the Sarlacc. Like, it's not in the Sarlacc. I like the Sarlacc sequence. I think it's cool. I think it's cool that he shoots the Sarlacc.
It obviously happened because he ended up right there. And the timing of it's like, okay, sort of convenient. So it obviously happened. And they didn't. Maybe it's a deleted scene, whatever. But it's just, we didn't see it.
Yeah. Edwin Black says, you know what? Like, give him a break. Boba isn't an experienced crime boss. He's an experienced bounty hunter and solo criminal, but not a boss. And that makes me think that he's like, this should be like an Office episode where we see like an incompetent boss plotting or like trying to become a boss. Like he's Steve Carell in The Office at this point, because literally everyone in the show
must tricks have. Oh, that's him. Right. Thank you.
Like they trick him. Steven Root's character comes and tells him he's got a problem. He shows up. It's not as he was advertised. He tricked him.
Yep.
Like there's every character in the show, except Fennec Sand puts one over on this guy.
I do. I like, and to Edwin's point, I like the idea that he isn't that experienced. That's not his thing. But, you know, and his whole thing is like, all right, you got to make people afraid. But, yeah, his motivations are just odd. You want to help people? Is that what a crime lord does? I mean, what exactly is the motivation here? Are you liberating things and shutting down crime?
Yeah, and Andy has a good point. He says, hey, look, it's fine that he got tricked. But then, like, start learning and getting savvier and show progression.
Sure.
He gets tricked right up until right through episode 7. He's getting tricked repeatedly. We should.
In fairness, that isn't 7 episodes of getting tricked.
It's like we should really, it's 5 episodes of getting tricked. We should just add like Benny Hill music to this, and be like, here's all the times that Boba looks at somebody and goes, I am Boba Fett. And it's threatening, but it's like, yeah, dude, we've heard about you. And like, short of like taking your cape and putting it over your head and punching you in the, like, I mean, literally Black Chrysanthemum makes it all the way to his back to tank.
Yeah.
How are these mods really his, in these Gamorreans? Well, we learn in episode 7, how bad of fighters they are and they're terrible guards.
I definitely agree. How did Black
tank?
I mean, I guess, you know, you don't think of Wookiee as stealth, but Wookiee's claws, like they can scale things. So I guess that's what it is. I would have liked to have seen that.
But knowing that, in that the Hutts did that and tried to assassinate him, all is fine. All is forgiven. And for some reason that is not justified, the Hutts are now going to leave Tatooine. I think that they should have been the only crime bosses in this show. The Pike Syndicate I don't, it just didn't make sense. You either got the Hutts or the Pike Syndicate finding some value here, but it got really muddy. And the bad thing is it actually gave two villains that now Boba Fett could get tricked by, because he gets tricked by both.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And the erosion of this character is rough.
Well,
and people are saying,
it's
hey.
Interesting you say erosion, because it's a character that we only have in our minds. Like, all you know is Boba Fett's an amazing bounty hunter. He's a badass.
I get that, but what's the problem? Let's not talk about the Return of the Jedi. Guy gets duped into getting kicked into the Sarlacc when Han Solo accidentally
hits
him.
That's a chance thing.
I'm talking about the Boba Fett that we were promised in Mandalorian season 2. This is a guy who is full faculties. He's got his ship back. He's got his armor back. He's kicking ass, and now he's going to take over Tatooine. And as he says to Fennec Sand, as we now know is a flashback, his goal is to be the boss. Okay, great. That is the promise of Episode 1. It becomes Steve Carell in the office with a rocket launcher he's letting everyone off the hook. He is not being a crime boss. He's being a patsy. And we see it multiple times. And so by the time you get to Episode 7, he's not a trustworthy protagonist. We got a respite from him in Episodes 5 and 6, where we can actually see Mando being the promised, like, badass bounty hunter, which is, you know, I understand you cannot have Boba Fett being the Boba Fett we expected in Return of the Jedi, because Mando, that show took its lunch. It said, this is the bounty hunter whose limited dialogue kicks ass and is ruthless. And we see him softening. We get it. You had to do something different with Boba Fett, or you just get another Mandalorian show in different armor. Right? They definitely had to do it. I think making him a crime boss, fantastic. Make him the head of a syndicate, fantastic. Let's see that. It didn't happen.
Let's have a real sense of syndicate. Let's see that there's actual crime and people. I mean, mobs.
He's literally, I mean, he's doing everything short of stubbing his toe every 10 minutes in the show. And we're supposed to think that he's still progressing towards the goal of being a crime boss. No, we lose faith in this idea somewhere in Episode 2. And then we're just watching to see if he's able to survive his mistakes for the next 3 or 4 episodes. And the mistakes are, there's lots of them, you know, and Episode 7 has a ton. He's got the biggest killing machine on the planet in his ship, and you see him badass guns down all these bikers he thinks are, you know, responsible for the killing of the Tuskens. Yeah, he'd got tricked. But where was it when he's able to pinpoint shoot a bunch of people off of speeder bikes? Where was it in that final battle? It sure would have helped against those two battle droids.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what about the Jaren ship for that matter? Maybe not the best bounty hunter ship, but why doesn't he just get in it and blow shit up?
Let's go. Where is that stuff? You know, and I mean, where's, like, Fennec just, she just leaves for 40 minutes to do something. She leaves for the main battle to do something that really could have waited. Those dudes weren't doing anything. They were sitting around playing dominoes.
Well, in theory, taking them out means no one else is coming, because they're the bosses.
That is actually a scene that we should see earlier to know that.
I agree. We should have seen earlier. We should have seen them coordinating. And I agree completely. Again, there's some story structure stuff that I have a big
problem
with.
There's a lot of untrustworthy narration, and it's rough. Ian, I can go back to my list and just keep going. The list is long.
I have some things that weren't on your list that I want to talk about. I mean, look.
Ian, Cad Bane. What a beautiful opportunity for Cad Bane to have been introduced as the cliffhanger of Episode 1 or Episode 2. Yeah. And suddenly everybody loses. The same way people lost their minds at the end of Episode 6 and said, oh my God, this Clone Wars character who has a history with Boba Fett, that's amazing. You can't rely on a show that came out 15 years ago that people watched when they were 8 years old as being something that any of
us. That's right. I watched it when I was 8 years old.
Well, Ian, you and I, Geekscapists are cut a little from a little bit of a different cloth, but you know what I'm saying. This is a 15-year-old character that a lot of people didn't see, and maybe you caught up on Clone Wars. I think Clone Wars is good of what I've seen, and I definitely know this character, Cad Bane. But he has a history with Boba Fett, and that history has to be established. And for the people turning on Disney Plus who don't know Cad Bane, having him introduced in episode one or the cliffhanger in episode two, and using those flashbacks that I talked about of a young Boba Fett.
I would like to see that.
Save one. Let's see the history with Cad Bane as a parallel to it. What the sad thing is, in the lead up to episode seven, we got this poster of artwork that is beautiful. Mm-hmm. This looks like a spaghetti western tapestry of the entire season. We got all the great characters. We got it. If that poster had been released in December and then been promised to, and everything that was promised in that poster had then been delivered from episode one on, that we get that tapestry, we get all these characters intermixing in this show, man, that show would have been an all-time Star Wars show.
I agree.
We get a little bit of Din. We get a little bit of Cad Bane. We get a little bit of Boba. We get a little bit of Black Chrysanthemum. We get all these characters in a Boba Fett show and these multiple storylines from the beginning. And we're just seeing how the fuse has been lit and how it's all going to shape and then how it's going to play out in episode seven. It would have blown our minds. This felt hollow for a little bit. Like, it didn't feel like the stories were tight. I'm sorry, Ian. Am I hurting? Like, I'm trying really not to be negative on this.
No, you're not, though I think you're spending a lot of time on saying the same thing.
They were playing with free money, man.
Sure. But again, you're spending a lot of time saying the same thing. There's a lot of other points to make. I mean, look,
okay,
I agree. And I've said, you know, I think structure was off. I think it should have been, you know, thought of differently. I've already said, I think conceptually, the Mandalorian season three and Tell Your Boba Fett story as part of it would have worked much better for me. There's a lot of stuff about, you know, listen, when episode five first came out, I was wondering, maybe this is just Boba Fett was seen as a six episode season and they threw a little bit of a, you know, it's a little insert of, meanwhile, this is where the Mandalorian is. And that episode alone was just set up, you know, and he's going to go off there. We're not going to see Grogu. I was really confused by the Grogu training stuff. It's like, because the first scene with Grogu seemed like it was like they just got there and then Luke had his thing and then show me that montage. And that'd have been, I mean, there's been some time that's gone by since the end of Mandalorian when he left. It's at least a month, you know? And that's yet, I mean, if you look at episode six, it seems like everything's in one day. And one day Luke sat down with him, had that. I get that he's remembering stuff. Then the Mandalorian was there. They have their little training. And it's all the same day. That was weird for me. And maybe it was pacing. Maybe they did things in the wrong order. But because I felt like it should have been that Luke was spending weeks with him at least. And that happened. And that's fine. But that really bothered me. Did you feel that?
I was bothered by that episode. No, as a Star Wars show, the first half of that episode episode six is actually a lot of fun. I like the ants. I like the building of the Jedi
Temple. Yeah, I like that too.
I like how it starts to lead into the sequel trilogy, although I'm not a fan of the sequel trilogy. I like that we're getting cohesive.
I like
Star
all
Wars.
That.
I don't have to like my Star Wars. I don't have to like everything in Star Wars.
No, I understand,
Wars.
But you see my point about this, the pacing of it? And like, again, yes. If they had done it earlier and just shown, listen, this is what's happening with Grogu. I get that it's like here's your big surprise, you know, but just instead of making it about that, just show it. And again, if it was the Mandalorian season three, that's what it would have been. But it was a big surprise because in Boba Fett, we got that, you know? And conceptually, that was a bit off.
I find episode five to be a bit of a problem. I find it really
five,
feels,
not six.
Yes, five. Okay. Where you just get a Mandalorian episode. And I was invested in seeing where the narrative that we ended up with Boba Fett, let's see where it goes. Let's play this thing out. I'm not getting exactly what I wanted, but it's a Boba Fett show and it's Disney's and it's Star Wars and they can do what they want. Let's see how it plays out.
Suddenly, I get that. I mean, it's scary to me how much better five was than the four before.
That being said,
it just shouldn't have called the book of Boba Fett.
If you actually put that in a Mandalorian season, would that have been a good episode for you, Ian, if that was a Mandalorian episode? To spend half the time building an episode one pod racing ship or whatever the heck that was, and you would have liked to spend 20 minutes building
I would have had some issues with it, but the Mandalorian has always had some of those issues in it, you know. So
episode five,
my wife felt it was just fan service, and if you're not a super fan, you don't get it. Because the stuff with the Mandalorians and all that was huge payoffs for me, you know, and getting explanations of stuff and how everything works together with Bo-Katan's perspective and all that. I thought it was, I really enjoyed that. But I do understand the criticism, including the criticism about so much time on that ship that is really cool and fast, but seems really pointless at getting bounties.
Oh, I can't wait for the beginning of Mandalorian season 3 where he's flying through space and there's a bunch of like heads tethered to the back of that ship. Right. And he's like, guess I'm bringing them in cold from now on because I can't fit them in here.
Well,
unless he's got Pym particles, how the hell is he going to fit them in that damn thing?
Right.
He's going to kill everybody.
Well, you just made me think of something that I've been holding back, but in relation to, and it's jumping ahead, but even in relation to Cad Bane, you know, is he dead? Here's the thing. I think back to Vader and Empire saying no disintegration. It's like, you know what? If it's not a disintegration, you don't know they're dead.
You know? No disintegrations. Yeah. No disintegrations. Great. Yeah.
I mean, because honestly, Cad Bane, in terms of the fight with Boba, he's dead. But is he?
You know,
where's his droid that if you know the Cad Bane stuff, he always had his trusty droid. You know, the joke, you made the joke about, oh, he's just coming out of nowhere. He's walking miles and miles through the desert, you know, to show up.
Oh, Cad Bane just wanders to the desert for a dramatic opening.
Odds are there's a ship not far away, and he has his trusty droid that saves his ass all the time that comes out and throws him in the back of the tank or mods him or whatever. I don't think Cad Bane's gone. I don't think he's dead.
You honestly don't think Cad Bane died in episode 7?
Maybe he did, but like it seems like why get rid of Cad Bane? He's a great character.
Because the writing at that point has shown evidence that the bad decisions are rampant.
I'm just saying that, you know, as is...
Why would that not be just another bad decision that was made in
maybe. So that's what I'm saying. Not definitely not. I'm just saying maybe not because, you know, because nobody dies. Everyone ends up in a back to tank. Unless you're Gamorrean.
The back to tank cannot become the save-all thing.
I know, but I think it already has. Right?
Yeah. I wanted to see Black Chrysanthemum.
It's back to tank and modifications.
Tank.
That's it, right? Everyone that Fennec would have been dead.
Or both, as we get.
Right, exactly.
No one survives episode 7 as valuable a character as they started that episode with. Episode 7 just really, it doesn't make Din look good as a fighter. It doesn't make it doesn't make Boba look good as a tactician. It doesn't make Fennec look good as a fighter. Like episode 7 just is a lot of characters making bad decisions.
Someone I know commented while watching in the middle said, Jesus Christ, they're just playing with action figures. And I think most people saw after Mandalorian season 1, you know, that meme that was an old ad from the original AT-AT toy. And a couple of kids playing with all the figures. And the meme is Dave Filoni and John Favreau writing The Mandalorian. Yeah. You know, but
which
literally,
I mean, Mandalorian.
Look, one of my favorite shots in episode 7 is Boba Fett and Din Djarin flying over, picking everyone off. And they're like, that really is like playing with action figures. That's exactly like,
flying around with the rockets. I thought some of that stuff was cool. I'm not going to be critical of stuff like the spin. You know, that's been something on the internet where like one of the mods is shooting a gun and he spins. I mean, just go back to episode 4. Obi-Wan Kenobi totally throws in a superfluous spin in his fight with Vader. I'm down with the spins. I'm down with all that stuff. It's fine. I'm talking about the actual character and story stuff not being consistent or building towards anything that's engaging or proves the argument that these characters are making. That Fennec narration when they're in this burnt out club and she's given nothing to do but narrate like a previously on Book of Boba Fett narration, and she's saying our people are throughout the city. They're not going to get the jump on us. Both things are lies because you see 4 people throughout the city and 2 Gamorrean guards with their back up against a cliff. Like great strategist and like. They're great. They're great strategy, pals.
Well, by the way, again, that speaks
and they won't get the jump on us. They got a jump on all of them. Every single one of those groups got the jump on them.
One of my biggest issues with the whole thing with him as the crime boss is the organization is just not as big as it should be.
No, we should have seen evidence of soldiers. We should have seen something more than a handful of people in an urban shootout. With the people of Freetown show up to save the day, which is a great moment. We should have seen them spread out and fight. Mm-hmm. The limitations of a of a digital set. We saw that in episode 3 with the Vespa ride, like Chase. That's tough to do, you know, on a set that doesn't actually move. Like, how much did you miss the Matrix 2 and 3 freeway in that sequence? Like, this is stuff that needs to be shot with some level of motion. Yeah. And I don't think it's a narrative problem. Like, there should have been a chase. I think it's cool. A chase. Let's catch this guy. The execution of it on a digital set is tough. And we saw that a lot. Man, I think we all wanted this to be something, not else. I think some of these pieces, that's the thing I'm telling you, they were playing with free money. Everyone who made this movie, made this series, is incredibly talented. Ian, Jon Favreau, talented. Dave Filoni, talented. Robert Rodriguez, talented. Every actor. This is so many talented people. They all get put in a soup that the ingredients didn't turn out to taste that good. And
they put them in the wrong order?
They put them in the wrong order. Some of the decisions were a little off. You know, we were bluffed a lot as an audience saying that these characters were tough or competent, and the evidence wasn't there that they were. The evidence was.
I like Mike's comment that they should have made the Rancor eat Cad Bane. That would have been interesting, I like it, but it doesn't get Boba needed the win, right?
Right.
I mean, I like the whole idea. Like, Cad Bane's so fast, you know, he keeps Jedis on their toes, you know? So mm-hmm. You can't beat him in a straight shootout. But, you know, the whole idea that Boba, to me, the way they did it, it was the sign of, yes, because of the Tusken stuff, he has skills that are beyond what he was before. And that enables him to beat him.
He's driven by fighting four people, finally, for the first time. And he has something to lose. I didn't feel that he had anything to lose once those Tusken Raiders were wiped out.
Well, that's what I've been saying to you. I know. Shouldn't there be other tribes? Like, I don't get the whole, it's these people, and we've both said the same thing. Like, I don't buy that he cares about those people. I don't get what the motivation is. When he went in the first few episodes, I thought, oh, the motivation is he's saving the Tuskens. If they're all gone, I don't get it.
Yeah, and Edwin says, and I agree with his point, I disagree on episode 7. Fennec is a pragmatic master assassin, not a soldier. She plays to her strengths. I agree, Edwin, but let's see her take out those leaders during or prior to that battle, so we know that there are no more orders that are going to be taken, that are going to be handed down.
Sure.
She takes them out after the battle. Like those people are, their people got taken out. Like we don't really need the retribution at that point. And also, like, if she's a master assassin, put her on a rooftop. She's been on a rooftop several times in this series and it's worked. Put her on a rooftop, have her play to her strengths. I agree with that criticism. Let's not have her in a street fight. Totally awesome. I agree. They might keep Bane alive for the Ahsoka series. Ian, we haven't really talked about what comes after this. Obviously, we got a couple Star Wars series here.
Well, we have Obi-Wan first.
We have Obi-Wan.
Well, Kenobi.
And then we have Andor. Both prequels. Andor. So,
yeah.
What damage can they do with those? We
definitely have Ahsoka. They tease that maybe Luke shows up in Ahsoka.
That'd be nice.
They teed that up.
And I like the Luke stuff. I like the Luke stuff. I love the Empire Strikes Back, like, nods. I wish the fans weren't such an influence, it seems, on what these stories are turning into. I wish the fan service wasn't there, because I honestly don't think fans know what they want. And I wish we just really saw the person who makes modern Westerns, like Robert Rodriguez, doing that. The person, like Jon Favreau, who is a Star Wars fan, just be a Star Wars fan. Dave Filoni, he wasn't doing too much fan service in Clone Wars. He was just telling good stories. I want to see these people not, you know, in a vacuum and just telling the stories they know how to tell. Like I said, these are all incredible storytellers. And I think when the fan service started being influential, this kind of became a kind of lumbering beast that had to veer towards it.
Well, that's season 2 of Mandalorian, yeah. Right? Because season 1 didn't do it. Season 1, you definitely felt like it was its own separate thing.
In season 2,
so much so, we didn't even dream for a second. Even when we were talking about finding a Jedi, we were like, we just assumed, well, it's never going to be Luke Skywalker, you know? Mm-hmm. And honestly, even the Ahsoka was like, wow, they did Ahsoka. And so cool. And a great, you know, it was teed up at the end of Rebels. So, I'm for it.
Yeah. Chris Robinson, he says, listen, Ian, we need to stop holding Star Wars to a high standard. It's just a cheesy space opera with space wizards. It's a fun ride overall, but a lot of it misses the mark. I do think a lot of it does miss the mark, but at the same time, it's just a cheesy space opera. Like, I think you just described Ice Pirates. I don't know if you described space like Star Wars. Like I said, there's talent here that's able to tell a good story.
He's right about is there have definitely been installments that very much missed the mark, and there have been installments that didn't. And that's the thing is, you know, and I think universally people felt, particularly season one of Mandalorian as it went on, and season two really grew, that the Mandalorian was so many people, we've all agreed, like it was, you know, what we always wanted, you know? And this Mandalorian had, you know, some moments that weren't maybe the best, you know, like what you described about, you know, them wasting all that time on building that ship. But to me, that was, they did the same kind of stuff in episodes of the Mandalorian. I'm not saying it's great, you know, scenes like that. I'm just saying it's the kind of thing that they indulge and do. You know, I just think that, you know, I thought what episode 5 showed us, whether it was for you or not, whether you thought that a lot of stuff was the time or not, it was much more interesting to watch than the 4 episodes before that. Listen, the hardest thing you had with the Book of Boba Fett is here's a character we cared about and we didn't know why. That's just true. You know, who is he? How is he rounded out? So what they did, and that was the point for me of doing the flashbacks. The point of those flashbacks was to say there's an emotional component to this character that you know it, but you didn't really see it. You saw it when he was a kid. You saw it in episode 2. So let's remind the audience that exists in that character. And here he is decades later, and he's still that little boy looking for family.
But also use that to introduce the Cad Bane relationship, which is also a mentor. It's a mentorship.
I think they were trying to do that by throwing out the, hey, guess what? You know, there's a connection here, and they should have shown it in the flashbacks. I think that I absolutely agree with that note. I definitely think that would have been an improvement. It would have resonated. It would have made it work better. And by the way, show Cad Bane in those flashbacks, then show him gun down. What's his name?
Timothy Olyphant's character.
Yeah, I know it, but I'm having a brain freeze.
I got you.
Cobb Vanth.
Yeah.
So, you know, have him run down Cobb Vanth because you already, you know, he's the badass. I mean, we know from seeing, you know, for it speaks to fan service. Not doing that flashback means you don't appreciate who Cad Bane is if you haven't watched the previous shows, right?
Which shouldn't be a requirement.
It should.
We agree.
Listen, I know people that didn't watch them, but big Star Wars fans said, like, he was the best in that episode. He came in, he's this badass. It was great. And that's a good argument, you know? But for the sake of it being the Book of Boba Fett, show that relationship exists.
And I like the idea of a mentor relationship because that's what he should ultimately be at the end of episode 7 to the people of this town. He should be the protector. He should be the person who is leading people by example. He should be protective of people. And if Cad Bane was the person who took over after Jango was killed to kind of show Boba the ropes and show him how to be a bounty hunter, but he was an errant mentor, he was the corrupted mentor, then you do have that circle closed. A lot of wasted real estate here in some of those earlier episodes. Again, when episode 1 ended, I said, wait a minute.
By the way, I mean, maybe it's fan service, but you had a bunch of Trandoshans. Where the hell's Bosk?
You know what? If we start getting too many of the earlier
characters, because we're talking about mentors. Because we're talking about mentors. And it's not clear in Empire, but it is in other sources that Bosk is a mentor for Boba. That Bosk was with him since he was a kid. You know? So, I mean, if that would have been interesting. Now that create, maybe
he did have a lizard go up his nose. He did have a lizard go up his nose. Maybe that's a shout out.
I mean, look, maybe the point of you, maybe they bring in Bosk later and create some issues with Kersantan, you know?
Sure.
But
Kersantan starts to get eroded as well over the course of his appearances. He really let them get the jump on him there in episode 7.
I didn't have the same issue with that as you did. I thought, listen, he was overwhelmed and he still came out of it. You know, they attempted
to use other soldiers. He had all these credits. Boba Fett was saying at the end of episode 4, he had all these credits he could spend on soldiers.
Yeah, I agree.
He hired 8 people.
Yeah.
Barely. He hired 8 people.
Barely.
And then asked the town to come fight for him for free.
Well, she went off to go get it, and her one move was Din Djarin. When Fennec goes off, right? That was her one move. That was it. I know where I can get some help. the one move, Din Djarin.
Yeah.
Get on a ship. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's a whole lot of other bounty hunters out there. You're a bounty hunter. Get on the phone, something. Like, don't, but listen, the idea that, you know, what Boba pitched to Fang Shan was attractive to other experienced bounty hunters. Aren't there more of them?
Yeah, especially
don't if you know them?
They're mercenaries. They want the money. Let's go.
I agree. And that's what I'm saying. I love the Mandalorian Armor Trilogy. I think it was a great book. There's a lot of Bosk stuff in there. You know, I mean, there's a lot of places.
Let me bring that up as a podcast. Mike Olivares, who's such a good dude. He runs comic book conventions in Arizona. The dude is just, he is a true geek. I love him. They should have peppered some of the Mandalorian armor book in there. That had a lot of boss content.
That sets them as major competitors. You know,
Explain what that is, the Mandalorian.
There's a trilogy called the Mandalorian Armor Trilogy of books that now are no longer canon, but we thought they were canon when they came out as books.
They're pre-Disney.
Yes. And they're pre-Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. So, and in that, you know, Boba and Bosk were big competitors versus them having worked together and Bosk having more of a mentor role. And they're really good. It just really gets into the Bounty Hunters Guild stuff, you know, which, you know, and obviously we've seen a bit of that in Mandalorian. They did it differently, but we do see a bit of, you know, the idea of the guild being out there. But frankly, knowing that that still exists, I think that would have been really interesting, even in terms of getting help, you know, the ability to have a whole other, you know, cameo in there. You know, I mean, like, do that reach out. Here's money. The problem with it is, you know, do you end up in a place of, okay, so it's who has more money? Maybe. But still, I think if money wasn't an issue, they should have had more help. I agree. You know, it's more set pieces, but I think that we should have seen that. And it comes down to the same thing. It's the same thing about the problem with the whole organization. He took over Jabba's organization. Well, what is it? It's a couple of Gamorreans. I mean, where's the organization? They go in, you know, to Jennifer Beals, you know, like, oh, well, pay me. Well, you know, the mayor, pay me. And that's it. You know, like, that's the collections. And they don't have people to do collections. Like, what, you walked in, you killed people. You know, apparently they killed other people coming in. You know, but
what's crazy when he goes to steal his ship, there's tons of people that are in that palace. There's all sorts of squads in that palace that he's got to get around. The palace could not be more empty once he took over.
Right.
He's got a Rancor. And he lets it do a King Kong across half the city that he swore to protect. Again, it's not a reliable protagonist on this one. The conflict between Fett Syndicate and the Bounty Hunters Guild could be a great series, Edwin says. I agree. I think any conflict would have been a good series. There did not seem to be a lot of conflict in this series. There seemed to be a lot of boasting of potential conflict, but a character stubbing his toes through five episodes.
You could not feel the conflict in the series?
No. Well, I didn't. I stopped trusting that there was real conflict when he lets things like the Hutt twins escape after trying to assassinate him, or gets duped multiple times by the Pikes. I stopped thinking there was going to be any conflict when Boba just seemed to be somebody who wasn't up to muster for being a crime boss. I don't think he's got what it takes to be a crime boss, Ian, and I still don't. And I don't think that was established by him letting a Rancor.
You better be careful. You may end up at the Rancor Poodoo for that talk.
It's Bantha Poodoo. Rancor Poodoo is a little different, but Bantha Poodoo
He let the Bantha go.
I know, he let the Bantha go. He shouldn't have let the Bantha go.
He shouldn't have.
He uses that Bantha a lot. Even after he gets his ship back, he's like,
I love when she called out. I was like, well, why did that go? Well, you know, he's got, like, well, yeah, but then you're coming back to the freaking planet. Like, you think, where's the Bantha?
Yeah, I'm down. Ian, are we really going to get a second season of this Boba Fett stuff?
I told you, I can't believe I come away from going like, you know, I would rather they didn't do a second season and just, you know, and let Boba Fett show up in the Mandalorian in a different capacity. But I think we're going to get another season. And I think it's going to be more about, it's still, you know, somewhat more of the same, but a little bit different because the spice trade's still going on. It's just about getting bigger, the bigger syndicate, the Crimson Dawn. If they do that, I'd like it to not be about Tatooine. Because by the way, Jabba's not just Tatooine. It's just his territory. That's where he is.
It's his whole outer rim.
Jabba the Hutt's like their organization's elsewhere. You know?
I'd love to see Nar Shada.
By the way, so again, and speaking of spice, and that's the thing, is, you know, Han Solo owed Jabba money because he was worried about getting boarded by the Empire and he was doing a spice run.
Yes.
He was smuggling spice. Like, that's a big part of Jabba's organization. So what are we talking about here?
Yeah, what did Boba inherit if it wasn't that?
Right. Protection for the locals on Tatooine? Is that all it is?
Yeah.
Is it not? Is Tatooine just not where the palace was? Is it not elsewhere?
Yeah.
Is he ambitious? So to me, what a fur of the season should be is actually showing it's a true organization and it's not only Tatooine and actual conflict with other organizations and dealing with the Republic and dealing with the Bounty Hunters Guild. You know,
are you interested in that? At this point, are you actually interested in that?
I could be. Yeah. Saying if that's what it is and they do right by it, that could be really good. You know, make the same offer you made to Feng Shan to other Bounty Hunters. Let them be, you know, your regional leaders and things like that. I mean, that can get really interesting, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mike Oliveira says he should have gone to Nal Hutta to confront the other Hutts. Sure. But he let those twins off without even a slap on the wrist. And right. Brian Deakle's right. He says maybe Fett should just be managing the public transit system. Yeah, it'd be pretty good. He derailed a train.
Again, why is there a train on Tatooine? Where are they going? What are they doing?
Spaceship.
Why are the Pikes running? I mean, is it about spice? I don't know why. Why?
Maybe it's a discotheque, and they're just playing music and just maybe it is.
When Cobb Vanth takes out those Pikes, and it's the one thing of spice. I'm like, I don't get it.
Maybe it's Sandpiercer, and it just goes around the planet.
I get it,
and they can't stop it.
1,000.
Yeah. That would have been cool, seeing Boba Fett fight his way up like Sandpiercer. And he just does his thing. It was messy, Ian. It was very messy.
A lot of it, yeah. Listen, but that's the thing. See, I'm like, I like Chrysanthemum's in it. I would like him to have actually said, yeah, Chrysanthemum has a life debt to him, you know? Like, that was my big disappointment in Solo. The life death thing was an established thing before, and they don't call it out anymore. That's right. Yeah. Pleasure train, we have water. Exactly.
Yeah. A pleasure train on Tatooine. Let's do it. Come on, ride the train. And it's just...
Even the suggestion that Tatooine used to be this paradise and all that. Like, you know, it could be interesting to get into that and how did it change. Is there a way to terraform and bring it back?
Sure.
You know?
Ian? Have we uncovered... Have we turned over every rock? I know I wrote you a book of points.
Maybe. Look, I mean, you know, there's the Mandalorian stuff I'd like to talk about. You know, there's some of the Grogu stuff. I mean, we didn't talk about the idea of Luke giving him that choice. You know, I mean, I suspect
we know it's not really a choice. We know he's going to end up with both.
He knew he was going there. Yeah.
They set it up in the beginning of the previous episode when they talked about a Jedi Mandalorian.
Right.
Like, we know it's going to end up happening.
There was no tension
in that scene.
Doesn't that make Grogu who's prophesied? Doesn't Grogu have to be the one to handle the Darksaber because it's going to take a Jedi to do it?
I'm down.
That makes sense, right?
Well, if he just learns to fight with the blade rather than like a blunt force object worth, like that would have been fine. I think Din can clearly learn to master the Darksaber. It's something that, you know, Moff Gideon did. Like, that's not a big
point. And Sabine Wren did too, but I don't know if you've watched.
Yeah, I just, you know, I lost a lot of investment here. Personal investment in the going ons. It felt a little bit messy. And I think they have some work to do to clear things up and work back some of the promise of this stuff. You know, I don't need it to happen. I mean, like Chris Robinson said, like there's ups and downs in every franchise. I hope they do. We'll see. You know, but going forward, I'll watch them. We'll clearly watch these shows. We're fans, and they got some cool stuff. I like writing a Rancor. It went on a little too long.
Yeah.
I like things like the Ray Harryhausen multi-armed monster that was in the episode 2. I like that stuff. Star Wars has some really cool stuff, but it's got to work together. And it, and maybe this was rushed. Maybe I heard that they were shooting, that they shot a lot. The character that was complaining about the mods was supposed to be in 4 episodes, the Steven Root character, and he was really only in 1 episode. So, I heard that this was edited in kind of an aggressive way. So we'll just see what they end up with. We'll see. And I hope that there's more X-Wing pilots out there patrolling the galaxy, because there seems to be 3. From what we can tell, the same dudes just keep showing up and being like,
well,
can I see your permit?
Well, you can argue that this is their sector and we're stuck there. You know, seriously.
Is this the same sector? This is the same sector that it was in Mandalorian? Desert planets?
Certainly near Tatooine. It's the Outer Rim. We're not sure, right? I know, because then you have the ice planet, right? Same guys.
Yeah, same guys. No, I don't know, man. I don't know. I think we need new ideas, and the ideas actually have to be lined up right. Like, this one hurt. This one took a dent in the Star Wars promise of the Disney Plus shows. But we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm always excited about this stuff. I'm always excited about fandom. I'm always excited about these shows. Sometimes they don't deliver. It's okay. I'm not the freaking law of this town. I'm not Cobb Vanth. Who cares what Jonathan thinks? I want people to enjoy this stuff.
It seemed like a lot of people I talked to didn't actually realize that was Cobb Vanth and that he's getting modded as well as being in the back of the tank.
Yeah, the tag is Cobb Vanth getting modded.
Yeah.
Rock and roll. I will tell you, like...
I would have liked to have just seen him earlier, but okay.
Sure.
You know, so we're going to get Timothy Oliphant back. Great.
So, which means we're going to get Tatooine back, which means grand.
Well, it actually doesn't have to mean that. I think it likely does. But my point is that the way they enter this, they could easily not do another season, and the characters exist, and you know he's going to show up again somewhere. But I do agree. I think it is in a Book of Boba Fett season 2. I do wonder if we see any of that in Mandalorian season 3 or not. You know,
I want to see some Admiral Thrawn. That's all I want.
That's an Ahsoka.
I know it is. But I want it.
Ezra Bridger.
Ian, closing thoughts before we set our sights to the next Ian special, which is coming up in a week.
My closing thoughts are, while I was disappointed in a lot of it, there's still a lot I enjoyed. The fan service, I fully admit, some of it really worked on me. You know, but still a lot of it was a lot of fun. But I think they can do better.
Yes. I think they can do better, and they have done better, and yes. I believe they will do better again. So I'm not bailing on my, I'm not getting rid of my Star Wars tattoo. I don't have a Star Wars tattoo, but I'm definitely not bailing on my Star Wars stuff. Okay, Ian, the next
I'm
time
still
I see
wearing
you,
my Mythosaur.
Next time I see you, dude, it's in a week when we talk Peacemaker season 1.
All right.
Like, that's a show I've been enjoying. And then, Ian, right after that, guess what? We got the Batman. So you're going to be back on Geekscape really pretty quickly. I am going to have other Geekscape episodes interspersed in there, Geekscape. You're not just going to get Ian specials. So again, please share the show with your friends, especially on the podcast apps. There are the mods. I have to go out there and join the biker gang right now. If you are listening on the podcast app, thank you for listening. I hope you're enjoying this. We're going to have a couple guests on the show, but we'll be interspersing these Ian specials in there because we have the Batman. We have the Peacemaker season 1. We have what Ian and I have been circling as what we're so excited for Morbius. Let's go. we got a lot coming up on Geekscape, so I'm excited about it. Our numbers have been great, and there were a ton of people in the chat today, and that really makes me super excited, especially on a Saturday when I don't expect to see any of y'all. Keep the comments coming. Keep talking amongst yourselves. Go share this conversation over on Facebook at the Geekscape Forever group or on the Geekscape page on Facebook, or keep talking on YouTube. We're all over, so search for Geekscape, you'll be a part of it. You can follow Ian on Twitter at Ian L. Kerner. That is his Twitter handle, and you can also find him on our Geekscape Forever page and Geekscape Forever Facebook group, and talk to Ian there and be like, Ian, I have a bone to pick with you. You could be Ian's personal Cad Bane and wander 7 days in the desert to have a dramatic opening and see if you get the first shot on Ian or not. All right, Geekscape, this is all I got. Geekscape forever, and subscribe, and we'll talk to you next time.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.